Everybody loves to go out to eat, right? But when you do you ever stop and think, how'd that food get there? Who's making it in the back? How did they decide what to do and how to do it? How does it all work behind the kitchen door? We're going to talk to a couple of experts here today. Not that they're not always experts, but we got a couple of heavyweights in the room here today, right? Yes. Chef Pascal being one and his friend Louis Butler, the other one here.
Hey, Chef, how are you doing?
I'm very good. How are you, Chef?
Good. It's good to have you.
It's great to be here.
I'm happy to have you here because I know of you. We met several times on different events, on charity events, but we never had a chance to know each other, really. And so I'm like the audience. I want to know more about you. I'm not talking about your private life, even though it's tough to have a private life when you have a job like yours. But
let's introduce where he's from. Let's tell who he is.
You are the executive chef at Waterfront Beach Resort, the Hilton in Huntington Beach.
In Huntington Beach, yes.
A spectacular property. If I don't know why I have not been there that often. When I was there the last time for that event that you guys were at, I forgot what it was called, but it was one of these, it was like the coastal food thing or something. Wow. Wow. It's not just a beautiful resort. It's got upstairs, you've got other shops and view of the ocean. And
terrible location.
No, terrible, yeah. Right across PCH.
Beach,
and,
that's right.
And you can walk across. I didn't know there's an archway that you can walk right down into the beach. Wow. Why doesn't everybody go there?
If you come to California, this is the place to go.
That is the place to go. And I don't know why. Maybe because I live in South County. North County seems a long way away. But I want to hear more about what he does there.
It's not that far. You can take your wife or your friends on the weekend.
Yeah. Shame on me for not going there more often. And I can't wait to find out more about the food and what else they do there.
Wonderful. So, Chef, you had a long and very extensive journey before you became the chef of the Hilton. First, you born in Canada.
That's right, yes.
And you went to culinary school there, no?
In England. My parents were both from London.
Yeah, so. And you got graduate there.
That's right.
You even got some special award in your graduation. Like
yeah, pastries. I was kind of like pastries, but I also like cooking the hot food as well.
I love them already. We were just talking about pastries and how few places make their own pastries anymore. They just buy them from some vendor here.
So that was a good start, and you were young.
Yes, very young.
Most of the good chefs start very young. And then you moved to the U.S.
Yeah, eventually, that's right.
And start working, I think, mostly at first with the Four Seasons.
That's right, Four Seasons.
And were you the opening chef of the Four Seasons in Pierce?
No, I wasn't the opening chef. And my position at that time was executive sous chef. So the man in the trenches, the chef in the trenches.
Yeah, and I remember, if I'm not wrong, hearing that you had a fabulous brunch there.
That's right.
Was it like a champagne brunch? Or it was Dom Perignon brunch.
In Beverly Hills, they better. Yeah. Come
on. We saw everybody. We saw from Denzel Washington to Janet Jackson. And this is going back to the early 2000s. But a very extensive brunch.
I
got
to jump in and ask one question. You make it sound so easy. You say he goes and studies at culinary school. And then his first job is at the Beverly Hills Four Seasons?
It was a while to get to there.
Yeah.
I was at cooking probably 15 years before I got to Beverly Hills.
So tell all his students. He teaches at Chef Pascal teaches at Saddleback, new fabulous culinary institute. I've even been over there, but it's really something. They built it on the Tustin base. They got a big thing. They built an automotive center. They built a big culinary training institute, state-of-the-art stuff. What do you say to these kids who aspire to one day work at a big restaurant? How do you get into that kind of job?
If you really have that passion, try to find a job, a summer job as a kid, and then see if really something you like. And then when you are at college level, just after high school, start to apply for culinary school, college. But you had a little advantage on that. Your family used to own a hotel bed and breakfast.
That's right.
And you were raised in that environment.
That's right.
And so is that where that come from, the law?
Pretty much. So my father was a printer in Canada. And then when he hit middle age, he was just like, they wanted to do something, him and my mom. and do a business together. Yeah. So they ended up getting a bed and breakfast. I was washing dishes at 13 years old, helping my mom dish up. And then when it was like career day at school, I'm like, I kind of cooking. And my grandfather, which I didn't know, I never met him. He was a saucier, and he owned his own pub eventually in England as well. So it's in the blood. And
so you were exposed a lot to breakfast at that time, because there was better breakfast. I don't think naturally a lunch meal. Or like that.
We would do dinners. So yeah. We did dinners.
But so.
And where was this at? This is in Canada. What
no, this was in England.
Oh, okay. Where?
In Somerset, a place called Minehead. It's right on it's on the Bristol Channel, so on the ocean. Not the ocean, sorry, but on a body of water. That's right.
So, does this put, that is why you become a good pastry chef, because of the breakfast making?
It's possible, yeah. It's definitely.
And so, did you keep this to influence your breakfast menu at the hotels?
Yeah, definitely. What I like about now is you see different people doing different recipes. Like, oh, I want to try it. Like today I saw somebody making cinnamon rolls, but she boiled the milk and the butter and the sugar together, cooled it down, put the yeast in. Then she also put baking soda and baking powder. And I'm like, wow, so I need to try this, because chef, most recipes, it's done one way, but once in a while you come across like, hey, that's a little different.
Do they let you that? We've had other people in from some big hotel chains, and that may be one of the downsides of working for a big group like yours, a big famous property, is that you don't have as much experimentation as you would if it was your place, where you can change the menu all the time and seasonally update it. Or is that different? Do you guys change?
Well, I believe, tell me if I'm right or wrong, because of your experience, this is why you got a job. And it's not really, even though it's a corporate job, they cannot say, this is what you're going to do. Do you have an open door to your own creation?
Yeah, I get to create as much as possible. I do it in a democratic way, where we'll do tastings and everybody can put their 2 cents in.
Yeah.
And it's always, does it need more acid? Is it... Does it have enough fat in the mouth or fat flavor?
So how many food locations you oversee in the hotel?
So we have a coffee shop where we do pizzas in the afternoons and evenings. That's called Surf Hero. This is our upscale dining that's open Wednesday to...
What is it called, Henry?
Henry Huntington, who found Huntington Beach. It was a railway. Yeah. I think he worked for the railway. Yeah. So that's our fine dining, open for brunch on Sundays and Wednesday to Sunday nights. Then we have Offshore 9, which is our rooftop patio, where we do a lot of shareable bites.
That sounds good.
And beautiful view, the best sunset views.
Our sunset must be going crazy there.
That's right. And then we have Cabo Wabble, which is a Sammy Hagar concept.
They're all still involved in it?
Yes, he was in 2-3 weeks ago. Okay. Came in. He's still touring quite a bit, so
we got to meet Sammy. We got to get Sammy Hagar in here. Van Halen.
Yeah.
I went to the first Cabo Wabble when it opened up in
Mexico.
In Cabo San Lucas, and it was a hit. And then I didn't know he'd done
crazy
other ones.
Place, so packed.
Yeah.
And so, but people may not know, in a kitchen like yours and the hotel, you have different section. That each section take the breakfast, the overnight, and the graveyard, and then you have a pantry, and then you have
room service,
and you have the catering kitchen.
Yeah. That's right. We do a lot of banquets. We do a lot of group business. We have over 500 rooms.
So take me inside that world, because a normal restaurant is one thing. Chef Pascal did French food, his French food. Others do fast casual, or they do fun food, or a caterer does just catering, makes it in big quantities. How do you oversee your operation does all of that, from little room service all the way to giant banquets, and then upscale dining in between? That would seem like a challenge.
Yeah. Can you Yeah, I'm a client. Can you customize the menu?
Yeah, definitely, especially for catering. Mm-hmm. And so when I would talk to students a lot of times, like I also worked at the private club, at the center club,
so
almost 10 years. So the good thing with hotels and private clubs and some other places, you're going to see everything. If you wanted an Italian wedding, or if you wanted a Hawaiian wedding, or a Hawaiian theme party, we'll do it. But if I always say, if you're going to go to a French restaurant, you're not going to ask them to cook Italian food for you.
No, I wouldn't think so.
You're going there because you want their French food, or vice versa if it's Italian. So that's the good thing about clubs or hotels. You're doing a number of different
varieties. So talking about that, how many different type of cuisine you have in the hotel?
So Henry's is more French, but French-American. Mm-hmm. Upstairs, Offshore 9 is more bites, almost like a little bit, not quite tapas, but similar sort of thing.
Kind of a Californian Spanish.
That's it, like a flatbread, some sliders. Mm-hmm. We do chai biscuits with a crispy chicken breast, little chicken sliders, all fresh, all homemade in-house.
And these are all open to the public. Why does that amaze me? I somehow think, we were talking beforehand, that hotels and resorts are there primarily to cater to the guests who are staying there. They want them to stay on the property. They want them to have a full range from breakfast to dinner and catering and everything in between. And yet, you said beforehand that you're really encouraging, looking to get people to come in.
Food and beverage is a big part of the revenue of a hotel.
I would think,
And let's say you have a half season. Okay, in the winter is going to be slower. But your restaurant and dining is still open. And you need to bring revenues. And so you can go in, walk in, and so I just go to the Sunset Terrace. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah, definitely.
Wonderful.
You don't have to just walk off the
street.
You don't
have to check in, no luggage, nothing. Just go straight up.
Because somehow, I'm always intimidated, I've said before on other shows, to go to a resort to eat with my friends. Because I think somehow I won't know where to go. I got to pay for parking. I got to find it. I got to wander the resort and look for it here. But I didn't feel that at all when I went into your place. It felt like I could just walk in off the street and find these places.
Everybody's very helpful there. I'm very professional. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, definitely, too. For the locals, we offer free valet or discounted valet.
Oh, wonderful. And how do you decide on how you finalize new menus? How many executive sous chefs you have?
So I have one executive sous, and then I have some chef de cuisines. I have a banquet chef and a banquet sous chef, and then two chef de cuisines. And
which would be what? Somebody just specializes in some cuisine or something like the fine dining or something?
Yeah, that's right. Henry's has a chef de cuisine. Cabo Wabo has a chef de cuisine. So he's in charge of that kitchen only.
You know the logistic of that? Every day you have to fill up a requisition and to get your food coming into you for the next day. A lot of logistics.
The sheer volume and the sheer diversity of it. I would think that would be crazy, because a typical restaurant, you know what you buy, you have vendors for that, and you in a weekend you figure out how much you're going to go through, and maybe it's a guessing game, maybe it's based on experience. But you've got a wide variety of menu items, from little bites to fancy food, to breakfast, to other catering this event is, a wedding this weekend. How do you figure out how much and where? That management of the food has got to be immense.
Each chef de cuisine or the banquet chef will do their own ordering. Every so often they'll come, and same thing if I'm doing it. It's like, we have 500 people, how much chicken breast? And if it's a buffet, we figure out how many ounces per person and divide it by pounds. And that's what we end up ordering.
When I work in a hotel, you have to make sure your food is on the right shelf. Because if you get
food is on the right shelf, what does that mean?
I mean, if it goes to different shelves, they will go to different kitchen.
Oh!
You have your own space in the walk-in cooler.
Oh,
That's very important.
It's got to be immense. You've got to have that big
storage. Sometimes something gets missed because I forgot to. Let's grab
this. They'll just take it. That's right. That's very true.
Oh, I'm a chicken breast. So it's amazing, the organization. And because I've seen in a hotel, you have, I don't know if you do that, you have clipboards, and you put all the, it's called a bio, when people write down the name of the party, how many people, when, time, timeline, and then the menu. And sometimes you have to staple them because you have 5, 6, 7, 10 gone to the ground.
That's right.
And so the coordination there is unbelievable. Because you can have 3, 4 parties, the same party at the same time, no?
That's right. And then Christmas time, every room is full. Those two big Saturdays when everybody wants their Christmas party, hotel is just jam-packed.
Wow. That's amazing.
So as an executive chef, having never worked in a hotel, having never really seen what an executive chef does, are you still on the front line cooking? Or are you now managing and overseeing and buying? And do you still keep your hands in the cooking part of it?
Yeah, more so when I first started. I've been there almost 5 years now. It was 2021 when I first started, so we were still coming out of COVID. So I was on the line a lot. Not so much now. Every so often, I'll break somebody. California laws, everybody has to take their break within 5 hours. Right. So if I can't find somebody to fill in, I'll fill in. And then, I'm usually doing something.
It's very important. But also, when you first went there, you wanted to give your food philosophy. So you train staff. And then, so you don't have to watch everybody cooking all the time.
So what is your food philosophy? Now you opened the door there. I never thought about it. What is your food philosophy?
Me?
Are you dictatorial like Chef Pascal was here?
I was French.
That's it. You're only allowed to say one thing. Oui, chef. No chef, oui, chef.
When you were talking about French. So when I finished culinary school, my parents wanted to, because I have a brother and I have two sisters, they wanted us to take over the hotel. And I'm like, no, I want to go back to Canada and learn, like work in the hotels. I need to learn a lot more. I have only 2 years of culinary. So I put in my name all over the place, and I was hoping Holiday Inn would call me. This was the early 80s.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know, because it was the early 80s. Four Seasons called me, and they weren't big back then. But when I got in the kitchen...
You're disappointed to be in the Four Seasons. I really wanted the Holiday Inn.
But there was no Gordon Ramsay there.
No.
But you know what? As soon as I got in there, the executive chef was French, executive sous chef. I knew I was in the right place. I'm like,
wow. I know. There was a time of change of the gastronomy. Got better and better in England at that time.
Well, this was Canada, though. Canada. But yes, definitely. Same as here, I think, as well. I wasn't here back then, but...
I wouldn't picture the Holiday Inn as being a great...
No, well, just back then, that was what I thought. And then I think, too, what we have nowadays, like back in the 80s, we were cutting our own chicken breasts, Frenching them, turning all the vegetables.
Even in a big hotel like that or something?
In the big...
West Coast, Ottawa?
Ottawa, so more East Coast.
More East Coast, okay.
Because chefs always lamenting the fact that nobody does that anymore. They just buy portions stuff and everything. I know, but isn't that true? A lot of the big chains are just going to portions.
Yeah, but the reason I do that, and even if I was not, I will still do that, because I always own and operate my own business.
Yeah.
So I know...
You could do that.
I know... what to do to have a good food cost. And so...
But am I wrong? Do the big chains decide somebody else is going to cut it and portion it and do all these things for
you? If you have a chef that's really conscientious about the food cost and the minimal waste, especially now, it's a big deal. There's a no-waste kitchen we try to have. And so, butcher. Butcher your own meat, butcher your own chicken, butcher your own fish if you can.
What do they do at the Hilton? Do you just buy
a mix of both? Obviously for banquets.
Oh yeah, if you need
500
chicken breasts, and you spend half a day.
Take the time to cut that up. Yeah.
Chicken breasts we don't debone. Like we used to get the whole chickens and debone everything, the legs. If we didn't use the legs at the time, would go to staff meal. And
you mean you don't do coq au vin?
Yeah.
Does anybody do coq au vin anywhere? I don't know.
We'll do it for brunch sometimes. So we do big Thanksgiving brunches, Easter, Mother's Day, and I'll always put a couple of dishes from Henry's, like a beef bourguignon or coq au vin.
Really? Okay.
Onion soup or
chef,
something.
I was privileged to have one. He cooked at a party I went to, a group of friends, and he brought beef bourguignon. I don't know that I'd had that since I was a kid. That's a dish I don't see often anymore.
No,
that's a classic.
That's so good.
Even though people think a stew, it's just a stew. No, It's very special. There are different stage and step to get to a good product. Tell us now, you mentioned that Sunday brunch, is it buffet style or it's more?
So in Henry's, no, it's just plated brunches.
But
you have
menu.
Like combinations, champagne, or probably
yes.
other things.
Yes, we do there. Champagne towers. We're called. It's like a fountain, like a champagne fountain.
Oh, cool!
So we'll put two bottles of champagne in for a four top or something like that.
Do you eat?
Yes,
you eat or do you just drink?
You like.
Is it really any entertainment, music? Or?
Yes, definitely. Right now we're doing like a DJ, kind of like a Vegas vibe, house music, not like really hard
not
pounding.
Sammy, not Sammy Hagar in there
no,
pounding away.
No, we'll play Sammy Hagar and Gobble Wobble, but not in Henry's.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I got asked a question that I'm most curious about. Not only how you run such a complex operation like that with so many different types of cuisines, so many different types of customers, so many different types of items there. Do you guys find yourself at the front of trying to experiment and trying to lead and trying to be interesting, or are you just following whatever the guests want? You know what I'm saying? Somehow I don't think of hotels as being the cutting edge of cuisine, because people are coming with an expectation. I'm staying here, I'm paying a lot of money, I want this. I may not want it to be experimental. But in Vegas, clearly that's changed in the last 10, 20 years. Very experimental, very unique stuff. So what do you find here?
Yeah, you have the choice, you know.
Yeah.
You have the choice to go to a specific chef, fine dining, or generic brunch in Vegas. But here, this is a thing, it's more chef mastered.
Yeah, we're making our own English muffins for brunch.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Using capricola instead of Canadian bacon. We're making little flatbreads for some of the things. We make our own pizza dough for the pizza. So, yeah, whatever we can make in-house, we're making.
And how do people respond to that? Because they're coming from all over the world. Do they have an expectation of what they're going to be served, or are they willing to be experimental and try things and appreciate the fact that you're doing these things yourself?
I think both. But what I also say to some of my chefs, where they don't want to deviate from the menus, there's people that are going to be at hotels that don't really expect to be there, want it to be there. But again, as I say, if you wanted to go to an Italian restaurant, you're going there because you want to go there, or a French restaurant. Where hotels, sometimes you might be there just meeting somebody or having a meeting or a conference. So, and then you really want. Sometimes the most memorable meals that I've had isn't studio, the old studio in Montage or a la Ducasse.
Actually, you talk about Montage. Chef Louis, Chef Butler, work also the Surf and Sand. And
you that's,
are,
right.
That's a famous one, yeah.
Yeah, and you are the executive sous chef cuisine with a very good chef, Ron Forgery, who was French trained. Mm-hmm. And you. It's a small kitchen, different than the resort. Small kitchen, but they used to do fantastic, they still do fantastic job.
So you mentioned your owner lives locally because you're a franchise? Somebody owns it and then it's a franchise? Of the,
yes, that's right. It's a franchise in Hilton.
So the restaurant, like the Cabo
Wobble,
are they different operators?
No, it's all one. One operator. Sammy Hagar takes a little bit of fees for using his name.
So he's
and
got
stuff.
The brand and
that's
the,
right.
He licenses the use of the brand and stuff, and they probably have a certain image and a guideline they want it to be. All the Cabo Wobbles would
can
be kind
you,
of the
can you open the Pascal?
We could open one. We could try that.
Yeah.
So I guess what I was getting at, I'm not trying to get you in trouble here, but your owner may be listening today. Shout out. You got a spectacular place there.
Yes, it's awesome place.
Does he want to be at the front of culinary stuff, or does he want to just serve his guests, whatever? Because he's got a wide audience from local to international, from banquets to business people here. So do they try and just keep it up to date and generic? We've got some of this and some of that, or are they really trying to be?
If I may say something, in hotels and resorts like this, you have a team of food and beverage management.
Yeah,
and
big team.
It's like a fashion publication. You have to get together and say, okay, what's next? What are we going to do in the next season? And so everybody pitch in. And I think that's what it is. And you have a weekly meeting and then update everything.
But I would think all chefs are always trying to push the limits and be creative, and then I picture corporations as saying, tone that down. We don't need so much of that.
That could be too.
No, yes and no. They definitely want us to do whatever we want to do. And everybody's taking pictures with Instagram or whatever. Yeah. So you want it to look nice and obviously taste nice too.
Yeah, wonderful. So one thing, I know it touched your personal life, but you play guitar?
I play guitar. So I had a guitar like many years ago. I'd play once in a while, but since I started at the Hilton 5 years ago, I'm like, I'm going to practice an hour every day at least, unless I'm not in town or something, right? But
and are we going to, do you ever get a chance to showcase your work there? Do you
I think I need another 5 years.
Do you play in the lobby or something here? Like they said, the guy playing the pianos?
We're just asking now. Never ask.
Do you know Kathy Thomas?
Yeah.
I did two videos, actually three, one time when I was at Serpent Sand. And she said, because after she has a little talk, and she said, you wouldn't know how many chefs are musically inclined as well. You
okay,
know?
So, I wouldn't know
so
that.
So maybe the artistry runs through the veins? I don't know.
we think we are artists. So love is a passion, like music. But also you like to go run and jog. Especially you go out of the hotel and go on the beach?
I haven't here, no. Okay. I've done, like, this was 20 years ago, 20-something years ago. I did Boston Marathon twice, finished it twice.
That's pretty serious running.
Yeah. So, fantastic. But I was at the Four Seasons in Vancouver when I really got into running, so I would do a lot of races and stuff.
So what's the biggest misconception? People know the property, have driven by the property. Prominent, right on the beach, right on PCH there, right across the beach, rather, on PCH. What is it that people don't know about the waterfront beach resort that you just, I wish they knew this. Why don't they know this?
We have the best food on the street.
See, there you go.
Oh, we have pools if you want to. You can get day passes, or if you want to stay.
You can get a day pass? I would think that's just for the guests.
No, actually, obviously, July 4th and times like that, we're not going to give you day passes. But yeah, we have some pools. We have a lot of activities. We do bonfires at the beach at night.
Really? See? Okay. Did you know they did bonfire? My wife adores that whole idea. My daughter, too, bonfires at Huntington Beach. They used to allow you to, I think they've cut that back.
I'm not too crazy about marshmallow, though.
Aren't you? Oh. No. So burnt on a stick?
Yes. Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah. And this is open to the guests, of course.
Yes.
So it's like being on a cruise. You sign for an activity. There's some special activities.
That's right, yeah, definitely. And we have bike rentals.
That's
at
why
the
we
beach.
Call it a resort, because you have options.
And there's a spa as well. Yeah, we were just working on a spa menu. We're about to launch it within the next couple of weeks.
And what does a spa menu look like, you guys? So, it have to all be healthy?
Healthy, obviously. Not a lot of salt.
Yeah. What else do you put in a spa menu?
You go to a massage and then you eat.
Well, but what do you eat? You don't need steak or something. You don't need. You got to have some special.
It is probably more of a, not a gimmick, but it's really, it's oriented to healthier food. Fresh fruit and
it's got to match what you just went through. It's got to feel like it's part of it, not
now
I'm going to cut loose and have 10 pounds of beef or something.
You have a good spa when you're watermelon martini.
Watermelon martini. Well, yeah, that's probably hip. So what are the trends these days? Well, that's one of the things I'm always trying to get at too. What's in, what's out, what's hot, what's not. Where is dining going these days? You've got all these different palates coming in the door. What are they looking
point.
For?
And people want to, because at one time, a lot of hotels went to steaks, and then a lot of hotels went more Asian fusion.
I see a lot of those. You go travel around.
Do you see some months like that? Or
what's your trend?
A little bit. But my question is, and maybe you can answer this, Chef Pascal, where are steakhouses going now for the new? Because if you think old steakhouses, very dark, old cocktails, velvet paintings on the walls or whatever.
Right. Big booths.
But for the younger generation or the new, the hip, where is that going?
Yeah.
And I'm trying to figure that out. Somebody told me what.
You mean they would bring an older crowd with not.
But more hip.
Yeah.
I'll give you some answer that just as a public. So I'm of a certain age, an aging baby boomer here, and everything you said was the image of a steakhouse. Dark, you had to feel kind of dressed up to go there, big booth, all that kind of stuff. And my buddies, particularly when I used to go out and had other jobs and we'd go to a convention or something here, everybody had to go to a big steakhouse. You were the bunch of guys that had to go to a big steakhouse. I look at my son-in-law, who's in his 30s now, who's a successful banker, he manages a branch and stuff. Look where he and his buddies go. They don't want to go to a cigar steakhouse and have martinis.
If hotels have tried the traditional steakhouse, the Ritz-Carlton did that.
Ritz-Carlton.
And the Bourbon steakhouse at Perfect. The Monarch. And they're having difficulties. Because
I don't think, I guess that's my core question. I look at the 30-year-olds who now want to dress cool again. They want to dress like the Rat Pack. They want to bring back all these cocktails, the old-fashioned, and all these cocktails that I grew up my father drinking or something here. But I don't think they're big steak eaters, and I don't think they want that fancy, dark feeling that they associate with the Vegas hotel or something. That's not what they're looking for when they go out.
I did experience that about a month ago with family that live in Surrey, Redlands.
Redlands, okay.
And we went to an old, I don't know how many years, probably 6 years, steakhouse restaurant.
Yeah.
Dark, and of course, beautiful booth. Everybody
knew what a steakhouse looked like.
Yeah, and pictures of Hollywood stars all over the room.
The Rat Pack.
Kind of historical, but it's no food is fine, but not exciting.
It's
not
dated.
Yes.
It's dated. It's yesterday. So I don't know if that's true of everybody, just my anecdotal evidence, but I look at the young crowd, the young guys, like my son-in-law hangs out with, and believe me, they like to be cool and hip and drink well and eat well and dress well, probably more than we did. We were old hippies. We didn't want to dress that great. We rejected the kind of martini culture that my father had and stuff here. Having said that, we all wanted to have a good steak. I don't see that's not the first choice. They say, let's go get a big steak somewhere. Anywhere.
No, I think now you are...
They're not grilling steaks at home. My dad used to grill steaks at home, right?
That's true.
Somehow they want something more creative, interesting, not quite as heavy, and something different. They'd be more into the kind of the fusion foods, I think, here.
Yeah, or small bites.
Small bites.
Big. When you do on the top of the hotel, it's terrace, you know, more tapas type.
I think tapas is in. I still think that's a hot thing. So I don't know how you make a steakhouse work today here.
Tapas, yeah.
Steakhouse is... Yeah, this time.
Nobody gets surf and turf. That was the ultimate thing. You'd pay a premium to have.
Most expensive.
The most expensive. And if you're really going to get big steak and a big lobster tail, and that was in a big martini or scotch or something.
Or the seafood tower.
Seafood towers, yeah. Because I don't think they're eating massive amounts of food like that anymore. There used to be restaurants, they would just serve you so much you couldn't eat it, and that felt was good.
Yeah.
Am I reading too much into this? Is that what you're seeing in your place here?
No, I think you're hitting the nail on the head. Do you think people are eating less than they used to?
I think because they're conscious of weight and they're conscious of diet and they're...
Well, yeah, but this is new because even still a couple of years ago, everybody was all about the tomahawk beef.
The tomahawk steak, the huge one.
But you never finish it. And you pay a big price because you pay for the weight of the bone.
Yeah, so, and it never tastes as good the next day.
And then you have to buy the sides and things like that.
That's right.
And you need to have somebody really good on the grill to make it right. So,
how about the other one that always drives me crazy is I love seafood, and I'm from the Midwest, so I came to California seeking seafood. It's on the sea. I don't see a lot of, there are some, but I don't see a lot of great seafood places. If it is, it's wrapped up in sushi and, I don't know, 14 different fusion things they put together, sauces or sides or things and stuff here. Just going to get a big swordfish or mahi or something. I don't know. Do you guys serve just real seafood restaurants?
Yeah, definitely.
And is that still popular? That seems to have kind of gone the way of the steak. I don't want just a thing. I don't want to get...
People who travel from the local or from out of state, they are right there. They see the ocean. So they want to see a good selection of fish. Some swordfish, some mahi-mahi, some yellowtail.
Like oysters. Oysters are still very popular. Oh,
yeah. I love oysters.
Yeah. Where we sell a ton of oysters.
I got a text from my best friend, yeah.
Okay, all right. And he's calling in, he's texting you questions here.
Say that the consider as a kind of fine dining, but still a real steakhouse, Rainway restaurant.
There you go.
They have a good selection, even though they have one on the water, but also very well oriented into a meat.
So let me add to her question, because I agree with what she's saying. That's a great exception to the rule that maybe steak is not quite, the steakhouse thing is stale and not as popular as it once was. I go with wine, too. I'll bet you sold a ton of wine at your French restaurant. I don't know a ton of places having a huge wine list anymore.
Yeah.
You had that guy, Wine Sommelier, the guy who helps restaurants, and he said they do a poor job building their wine list. They don't have a thought-out list, and not just an extensive list.
Actually,
they don't have
maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you can tell us. Maybe people drink more when they stay in a hotel. They don't have to drive home.
You would think, but I don't know. Again, I don't see people going out and buying bottles of wine like they used to, or looking for different wines, or having the sommelier come over and recommend stuff. That kind of was that image of the steakhouse and or the seafood restaurant. There was something about that experience that you had to have a bottle of wine with it. I think they're more likely to get tequila or scotch or something else or whatever.
It could be considered a steakhouse, upscale, fine dining.
Mastro's is still the exception. Everybody's packed and everybody goes there, and it's the old world exception to the rule.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but
it's more than just dining and drinking. It's the whole thing to be there, people watching, and the whole thing.
It's a place to be seen, and you go there showing you're successful, or to feel successful, or to be successful. It's a big prize.
That's very Orange County.
Yeah, very Orange County. Yeah, not so much what I'm eating, but who's seeing it. And everything. So what do you think about wine? Is wine, because wine sales are down?
Well, alcohol sales are down. They're losing billions of dollars. Like, this new generation is drinking maybe the energy drinks and coffees. But
yeah, mocktails and stuff here.
But yeah, all the alcohol is, the sales are down, you know, and
my son-in-law, who makes a good living managing a bank, would never buy a bottle of wine, ever. Ever. Partly because he doesn't know, and partly because he doesn't want.
Talking about that, I've read something about you doing some Mikkel's dinner.
Yes, we're doing Levente is coming up in Vendi, sorry. Yeah.
Levente, I just got an invitation, and Levente is fabulous winery, and Steve and everybody there are amazing.
So how are wine dinners working? Yeah, because I used to love going to wine dinners. That's something I don't see as much.
People still like it.
That's right.
Because the winemakers there.
Either winemakers or the winery owner. And mostly they're local wines. They're from Sonoma.
They're not going to bring in French wines or something here.
And we're going to do Camus probably October, November.
Well, that's a big
one. We're going to do a Camus dinner.
And when you match them, are we matching them with just traditional dishes, or are you being creative?
No, being creative. This Levente wine dinner, all my sous chefs, all my chef de cuisines, whatever, are going to do a course. Each one is doing a different course.
Cool.
So it'll be fun.
Including Cabo Wabo?
Including Cabo Wabo. We did a wine dinner back in May, I think it was, and we had Chef Bill Bracton from Bracton's Kitchen. We had the old chef who's now at the Griffith Club. He did a course as well. I did a course.
Let me know if you want a French course.
Yeah,
beef bourguignon, a little coq au vin.
Maybe for the Camus or whatever.
Camus would be good because they have a lot of Bordeaux blend style wine.
Nice.
So I would love to be in.
What's your favorite wine?
Nobody's after
the one I'm going to have tonight.
The one I haven't had yet.
That's the best answer.
No, but what do you? That's an interesting question, because I would assume, I wasn't an expert of your previous restaurant. It was so famous. I can't recall. You must have had a big wine list. You must have paired wine all the time, no?
I have actually a two-page wine list.
Really? Okay.
Sometimes we went to three. But really, knowing there's no reason to put every popular wine on your wine list.
Okay.
If you can personalize wine that match your food and make it also more from artisan, more small wineries, I didn't like big names. I won't say any big names.
Okay.
And mass production. So more boutique wines.
But yet that's what the customer, if they know wine at all, they're going to know the big names. They're going to walk in and,
yeah,
and look
but
for
this is what the,
Mondavi or
the
I don't know, something.
The service come to you and we will take your wine order. Say, this is something you should try. Maybe you never had the Grenache. Maybe you never had that Rhone blend from Paso Robles.
I would think those would sit on your menu forever because nobody would try them.
There's more and more interest into that. People want to know. And if you tell them a story.
The story is the key.
Behind,
if you can tell them a story.
Behind the wine. People say, oh, okay, let's make it an experience.
And I always argued that if they enjoy it, they will come back because it's the only place they can get that. And then they want to be an expert and tell everybody else, let me tell you the story of this.
Yeah. Most of these wines, you don't find them in the wine shop, you know, and because it's more boutique. And it's a pain for the restaurant because sometimes you have to buy directly from the winery. So it's more vendors. And no, wine will never go away, especially in California.
No, I'm not saying, but I don't think it was the centerpiece of the experience. So often was the wine, and a bottle of wine was more in California than anywhere else. It was the assumption you had to have wine with fine dining. Now they'll try everything.
Yeah,
beer.
But the food and beverage management always say, do something wine friendly. Write a menu with a wine pairing and say a suggestion of wine with each dish.
So it encourages them to buy wine.
Yeah, and
one goes with the other.
And wine by the glass is a big deal still.
Yeah, you make money on that, definitely.
So your friend was saying that not many people are pushing like half bottles and other sorts of things.
I thought all about wine by the glass, if you don't feel afraid to charge the price, one or one half serving pay for the bottle cost.
Right.
And the rest is perfect.
Because the fear is it doesn't get consumed and then it goes stale or bad.
Yeah, but now you have ways to
put some gas and stuff in.
So, and one thing I don't want to forget to talk about it. You were the chef of the Center Club.
That's right.
And when I post I did a presentation for today's show, and we had responses that people that loved you there, and they're still members, now it's called the Park Club.
The Park Club, yes.
But you were very popular at the Center Club.
And the Center, how long were you at the Center Club? A few couple years ago?
I've left 2021. I started 2010.
Our studio, before we were here at UCI, was in that office tower right across from the Center Club at Bristol and Sunflower there. And I'm telling you, half of the show hosts that I had come in, half of the guests, either were on their way to the Center Club or for lunch or brunch or dinner or having come back. That was the hot spot in town. Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry that COVID killed that. And they've been trying to restructure it and find their way ever since. But
it's
that
still
was
a beautiful
place.
Club.
Beautiful.
But it became a bit more private.
Yeah.
And the Center Club was really an Orange County hub.
It was. Mm-hmm. If you wanted to go see where the cool people, the hip people, the especially the business people, the young business types, they were at the Center Club.
So I didn't know you were the chef there for 11 years.
So Chef Bruno, did you ever meet Chef Bruno? He was he was 16 years there before me. Mm-hmm. So in 26 years, there was just two chefs.
Oh, my goodness. No, I didn't know that. That's a story right there. Quite a testament because everybody loved the Center Club.
Thank you. So did you go back to the Park Club?
I have not been through the door
Why
since
don't
then.
We have,
I will.
Let's go have lunch sometime.
Yeah, definitely.
You're friends with the young guy who's pretty creative. The young Asian guy that's
Chef Daniel. Yeah.
Daniel,
that's right.
Yeah, amazing chef. Oh, but was more of a Pacific Asian influence into his...
I follow him on Instagram, so I see
very
what they're doing.
Creative.
Stuff. Yeah, very
creative.
Very nice stuff.
How do you guys keep up with each other here? Do you follow now Instagram and just see what they're cooking, or do you go taste and try?
We're nosy.
I don't think so.
But he comes back to us, too, because I see some posts on Instagram, some on Facebook, and the same chef will respond to my post as well. So it's very important. It's a networking between chefs.
So do you have a style? I mean, you have to oversee many styles. I'm not saying Chef Pascal has style, but your guest here, does he have a style? If I just turned you loose and you could do anything, what is it that you cook? What is it that you prefer?
Like specialized. I started the Four Seasons in the early 80s, and it was all French chefs, so I'm pretty partial to French cuisine. Mm-hmm. But I also like to push it to maybe be a little lighter if possible.
Less butter in the sauces and all that stuff.
Yeah, that definitely makes it taste a lot better.
Which is what California cuisine was. That's my impression.
Yeah, I was going to say that. It's just cuisine was not Pacific Rim, but Pacific and a little bit of Italian, Southern France, Mediterranean. Mm. So because
it's like French food climate. Light.
Yeah. French, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Back in the days, they used to put sauces on, heavy sauces, because they weren't getting the fresh fish or the meat like we do today.
Cover it up.
That's it.
But being heavy sauce.
Put a little
but that's what
Bernays on
the
everything.
The American here. Way to call this is gravy.
Yeah.
I hate gravy.
I hate gravy, too. Oh, my God. You're the first person ever I could admit that to. As a kid, of course, I grew in the Midwest. Everything is covered in
even
gravy.
Even at Thanksgiving, I don't eat gravy.
Every Thanksgiving, is just I can't taste what's
for
under.
For me, gravy is a sauce that
just kills everything.
Yeah. That gets rich because you put flour or roux into it. So
good. I'm going to play this for all my family who are always beating me up because I won't eat gravy. My aunt used to say, you used to say it was that yucky stuff. I don't want it. I want to taste the food.
Sauce.
I don't taste the gravy.
Sauce.
Yeah. So, all right. So French would be a thing if you try, if you go out and someday in your old age, Pascal, here you're going to open up your own restaurant, and it's going to be a little after you've retired
maybe.
From the Hilton here.
Every chef has always a little
project
in mind. Say, maybe I should have my own. You know? But
and what would it be? Would it be French food, or would it be?
Or even a little bakery would be kind of nice too.
How you talking?
Know?
Yeah.
There's this guy in Arizona. I don't know if you see him. He has a lineup, and he opens the window, and he says, how's everybody doing? And then
a couple of pastry chefs do that in Paris.
He went to Paris for a little bit.
You can see they have an open kitchen window on the street, and people are there watching.
Peeking in.
Peeking in. It's definitely amazing. Very popular. And then you wait.
So what is the state of dessert? That's another common question asked. I love dessert. I have a super sweet tooth. Desserts have been in decline most of my life. Restaurants don't make them anymore because they don't serve enough of them. People don't buy them. When I go out with my family and friends, nobody wants dessert but me. They all groan because they want to go and I want to have dessert. What is the state of dessert today?
I think since COVID, we went down and took maybe 5 dessert items off and we were running at 3 or 4, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if you've noticed that, but and then it's usually like a creme brulee or some kind of chocolate cake or mousse cake or
chocolate
something.
Chocolate cake, out of a chocolate cake.
Sunday brunch, cheesecake, still popular.
Cheesecake, yes, definitely.
So, but is it nothing more than that? Do people not crave?
People like little things like brownies. And they really like that.
Yeah, a little cookie something,
Earlier in the show, you had somebody who was making ice cream.
Ice cream, on the last show here.
It's going to be a brand new.
And they're making ice cream,
brand new style of ice cream shop. Yeah.
Mexican ice creams, other flavors and stuff that you don't normally see. And they were talking about the fact that many people come in. Again, ice cream was the favorite dessert in the Midwest. Your parents took you out for a thing of ice cream, Baskin and Robbins or someplace here. Yeah. And that, I won't say it's gone, but it has definitely declined. People, and if they do, now it's more of the sorbets and stuff. I discovered sorbets when I came out here.
Do you serve ice cream maybe on the poolside?
Yeah, definitely. Now we actually have those little things called
lollipop?
A dip and dots.
Dip and dots. Really,
for the kids, we have it. But one of my favorite desserts has got to be Crepe Suzette.
Oh, yeah.
It's...
I said, when's the last time where could you find Crepe Suzette anywhere?
You call me.
Yeah, but I can't imagine.
I'm sure he makes a mean one.
I can't imagine anywhere we could.
I like Crepe Suzette 200% more than souffle.
Really?
Yeah, me too.
That's okay.
Souffle is a show.
Yeah.
But Crepe Suzette is like...
Really?
In the past, restaurants, especially steakhouse, used to do banana foster flambé.
Nobody does flames anywhere.
No. The fire afraid? Codes.
Fire codes.
Stuff,
I'm going to say they're afraid to start anything on fire anymore. Here.
That's right.
But this surprised me because I thought souffle was the ultimate thing in a French restaurant. You had to order it before because it took 30 minutes to make and stuff here. And it is a showy piece and it's hard.
Yeah, for the past, I went out of the brasserie of Fashion. We had souffle. Yeah. Grand Marnier souffle, chocolate souffle.
Chocolate souffle, yeah.
And,
but nobody's doing that anymore.
We tweak it to make sure the things they are.
I didn't collapse.
So we tune up the recipe to make sure.
Oh, I know. You cheated a little bit just to make it stand up.
Put your spoon, brrr,
and it collapses, yeah. So, yeah.
Or if the server's too long getting to the table.
Yeah, exactly.
But I like a good clip to that table side. It's fantastic.
That seems so simple.
That's it is pretty simple. But
very simple. It's sugar, orange juice,
Grand Marnier,
flambé, bam, and butter.
So what would we, as we're coming to the end here, if I've never been, somebody who's never been over to the Waterfront Hilton, shame on you, first of all. Shame on me, because I don't think I've ever eaten there. I have ever eaten there. Again, I thought it was a resort for those staying there. I didn't think of it as a resource for the local community. So I'm going to go try something here. And Cabo Wabo, I'm familiar with that. But what should you try? What's the standout thing?
Go to Henry's.
Henry's. We have Cote de Boeuf at Henry's for two.
I don't even know what that is. What is it?
Like a T-bone, a large T-bone. It's cut into the rack on the bone. So you have the whole loin, and then on the other side, you have lay. Cote de Boeuf.
Yeah. So that's a popular one. Right now we have Branzino on the menu as well. So
I don't know what that is either.
That's popular.
What's Branzino?
That's the most popular fish with a good size. And I don't know now the farm raised, but the original ones were Italian. And usually grilled, roasted. And most of the time they carve it table side.
Wow, they carve the fish table side.
In French, is that Loup de Mer or no?
It's very similar to
Dorade. It's not Dorade.
No, Loup de Mer. It's a long thing, like a mullet.
Yeah. I worked in Montreal for 6 years. So again, that was all French food as well. Mm-hmm. Some of the best food in North America.
I have some amazing brasseries. And
Montreal is France. You've just time warped. The minute you walk in, they're speaking French. It is French. It's not a...
And it's a booming restaurant creativity there.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of young chefs, a lot of pastry chefs, and they actually have great ingredients, good farming there in Canada.
Apparently, there's a lot of great chefs right down the place, all gathered in one spot called the Hilton.
Hilton. Yes.
Hyatt Waterfront Resort. Website, how do they find you? How do they learn about what the different restaurants are and what's available?
Waterfrontresort.com.
Okay, all right. And they asked for you? They asked for the executive chef? Are you out front or are you hiding all the time?
No, because there's two towers. One was built 36 years ago, and then the other one was built 2017, 18. So there's two different kitchens. So I'm walking in between there's more, because even if you got to go upstairs,
jogging part.
Yes.
I picture the executive chef as somebody you never see. He's the producer of the movie or the play. He's the one that you don't see behind the scenes.
He's a maestro.
He's not maestro. He's not walking the floor or on the line or whatever here.
No. I have a great team and they do a lot of good work. So they make me look good.
So you move on from the French way to be more army style, but you still have a brigade.
That's right. Yes. Yeah.
Good. And thank you very much.
My pleasure. This was really
a rare opportunity to hear from somebody who's running one of the rare highlight huge properties here in Orange County. And I'm the first to admit, I haven't sampled enough of what you've got to go there.
And let's insist on that. Locals need to go to hotel and resorts.
Absolutely. And somehow I think, you think of it as a chain. I guess it's not. It's a franchise. But you think of it as... I'm more likely to go to a little mom and pop Pascal's than I am to Henry's, even though it might have the same type of feeling and flavor to it. But I think of it in a big resort. Somehow I think it's not going
to
be...
And it has to be big resort, too. Montage is not a big resort.
I don't go to the Montage very often.
But they have great restaurants.
Yeah, I know
great
they do.
Great dining. Surf and Sand, amazing. The Pantry.
The Pantry, we talked about it. I still have yet to go over and try some of the different things they have there.
More and more high-end hotels have of public cuisine or restaurant dining open.
For the community, not just for their collection of guests here.
Well, talking about funny, do you have a private or VIP club at the hotel?
I don't think that's the Pendry's really trying to be unique about that. That's really an.
They do have Pendry does have one.
Yeah, they have a private club. So imagine a public or a hotel. You would think would be I'm staying there. I don't want people traipsing through, going to a nightclub or a private club here or something. You would think that would detract from the resort laid back, escape from the world feeling that most resorts try to convey here, and yet they do. I think that's what makes them unique in doing that.
Maybe you have DJ night too at the bar, no? At the hotel?
At Henry's? Are you saying?
In Henry's.
Henry's?
The W Hotel does it in the lobbies. They put them in the lobby and stuff.
We have DJs at the pools on the weekends and stuff like that. And then Henry's does the kind of cool vibe music.
Good.
DJ.
Good. People like music. People like concerts and that.
To build an ambiance, some atmosphere and stuff.
Well, it sounds like it's the cool place to go, and I got to definitely check it out here. Okay, the Waterfront, what was the website again?
So it's, waterfrontresort.com.
Waterfrontresort.com. Thank you for coming by and checking it out here.
Thank you, Chef.
Fascinating conversation here.
Thank you.
Well, we could go all night with this here. I'm telling you, lots to talk about here. A property that maybe is worth looking at again here. Maybe you haven't seen it in its full glory. I'm certainly one of those. Let's so close. Why not? All that and more as we explore what's happening behind the kitchen doors right here in Orange County on Orange County's only community radio station, OC Talk Radio, streaming live from our studios here at the University of California, Irvine's Beale Applied Innovation Center.